Well, to a New Zealander now, trying to combat COVID-19 in some of the most challenging corners of the world, some of them the next in line to feel the full force of the pandemic. COVID-19 has spread to more than 100 countries, some of whose healthcare systems were very fragile even before the pandemic took hold. Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, tries to get emergency aid to victims of war, epidemics and natural disasters, often to people who find themselves outside of healthcare systems. The medical humanitarian organisation has a presence in China, Iran and Syria, Yemen and Burkina Faso, also operating in Europe, including Spain and Italy, where it's supporting three hospitals in the first epicentre of the outbreak. So where are the greatest challenges presenting themselves right now? And how are travel restrictions and supply chains affecting MSF's work around the world? Former Northland Medical Officer of Health is Dr. Claire Mills. She's now MSF's Medical Director and is with us from Paris. Hello, Claire.
Kia ora, Catherine. Good morning.
Well, what is the scope of your job at the moment?
Well, I guess MSF is used to dealing with crises and emergencies and epidemics, but I have to say this is one out of the box. And it's certainly very challenging. As you mentioned in the introduction, we work in countries that are already very fragile, often in conflict, whether it's Yemen, Congo, Gaza, the Sahel, and West Africa at the moment are areas of real concern. We often are working in places where populations are very vulnerable because of the humanitarian crisis they're faced with, or because of other epidemics they may be already confronting. For example, we've just almost finished, we hope, an Ebola epidemic in Congo, but also a huge measles epidemic. And then, of course, there's a lot of people living in poverty and in highly vulnerable situations in very crowded urban slums, for example, where we also work quite a lot, and where some of the things that are being tried in more developed countries are probably not going to work terribly well. So that's very challenging.
Yes, it is. Could you speak to the role you've had in some of the high outbreak cases already, like Italy and Spain? Could you speak to what your role's been where the pandemic is already nearing its peak?
Well, what we've tried to do is bring our experience from working in other epidemics to this event and this context. Obviously, many of our headquarters staff are nationals from those countries.
Claire, just losing the line there. I think we may have lost the line, have we? Okay, just see if we can. So, Claire's back. Hello, Claire, we just lost you. I'm sorry.
Sorry, okay. As I was saying, we're trying to use our experience from working in epidemics in other places to support some of the programming in developed countries like Europe. So with a particular focus, though, on vulnerable populations, people who have lived on the street, young migrants who have often been living in very precarious situations, older age homes where there's been a very high rate of infections and deaths, especially reported in Spain, but also in other European countries. And I think also the way we approach things, we're used to having to triage in a crisis. We're used to having to be very strict about infection control and to do that without much resource. And I think those are some of the things, as well as some very experienced staff, that we have been able to contribute.
Where in the world are you most worried about with respect to health systems? This epidemic is testing some of the wealthiest nations' health systems and the most developed health systems and, tertiary level health systems. Where are you most worried about?
I think at the moment we're really worried about Africa, particularly those countries in conflict, and the conflict in the Sahel, the instability and conflict in Democratic Republic of Congo. And I think that the issue is partly that the health systems, as you've noted, are very close to collapse, but also that populations are already very difficult to access. And this is also true in places like Yemen, where there's been years of conflict and health systems have really deteriorated. And so the challenges there are to build off what we're already doing, but with great difficulty, because we have a problems as do developed systems in terms of getting access to testing, in terms of protecting our staff, and we can't do much if we can't protect our staff. There's huge global pressures on supply of personal protective equipment like masks and gowns. And so we're equally being affected by those things.
Are you able to source the essential PPE for many workers?
We're having real problems. And I think you may have seen in the news that the US is paying big dollars some French reports suggested that some of the PPE that the French government bought was rebought by the Americans before it left the tarmac in China. So I think MSF is a very small player. We have got some connections, and of course we have got a good logistics and supply chain, but it's looking pretty grim.
Countries like Syria that have been ravaged by war and conflict, what's happening there? And again, in some of the, you mentioned Yemen, do you have a presence? Are you able to have a presence or much of a presence in some of these countries?
We have some presence still in the north of Syria, near the Turkish border, but not very much. And in large parts of Syria, we haven't been able to work with international staff for a long time, but we do support some programs still there. In Yemen, we have got some quite big programs including surgical and maternity programs. So what we're trying to do, in fact, in all the countries we work is to identify what are the really critical services, because we're really concerned, as we've seen in things like Ebola, that a pandemic like this could really block access to really critical services for things like malaria and HIV and other infectious diseases that will kill people more than COVID will. And also for things like trauma and people who are injured in conflict. We still want to be able to maintain some basic surgical services and some maternity services to prevent women dying in childbirth. So that's a real challenge as well.
Are you able to liaise with governments and authorities over how to plan for this? How much cooperation do you get in different places?
A lot, actually. And I think in a lot of places we work, we've had ministries of health sometimes who haven't always been easiest to work with actually coming to ask us for help. Our help at the moment is a bit limited by our supply of PPE, but also in most of the countries we work, ICU beds and ventilators are extremely rare. So we are focusing on the what we estimate to be about half of the people that end up in hospital or three quarters who basically need oxygen, sometimes high flow oxygen, but who will pull through if they get oxygen. But even that is a big ask in many of the places we work. And we won't have access to a lot of ventilators. We'll be trying to do our best to provide good supportive and palliative care for people who are really in severe condition.
I think you're also trying to mount a project in Iran at the moment that involves an inflatable hospital.
Well, that's a complex situation. We got the go-ahead to go in, and then I think the Republican Guards decided they didn't think they needed us, and now there's some discussion about being able to work with Afghani refugees. And we already have a project near the Afghani border, and we're looking at how we can support some work there. We're also trying to work on the other side, on the Afghanistan border in Herat, where there's also a lot of cases, and that's also extremely challenging.
How can people help?
Well, I guess it's an unusual situation for us in that, our headquarters are affected as well. And I think for me, this is really a global pandemic. We are all in it together. And I think it's going to be very tough for a lot of people everywhere, including New Zealand and France and developed countries. But there are always people worse off, and I would hope that people do still feel a sense of solidarity and could give a few dollars a month to people who have got less than they have. And so I guess one of the things we'd like, obviously, is that we have a huge donor base, and we are 95% funded by individuals like you and me who give a few dollars a month. So we would really like people to be able to continue doing that, obviously. I think the other thing is, to keep an eye on what is happening in the rest of the world. It's very easy to get wrapped up in what's happening in where you live, obviously, but I think this is going to go on for a while. It's going to have some long-term effects in terms of the social and economic consequences on many of the places we work, and that's going to need some long-term work to really redress some of those situations as well as the health consequences.
Is it an obvious statement of fact, but one we should remember, that in many, many of these countries where you work, it is likely that the mortality rates, the death rates, will be far higher simply because some of that higher level care won't be available to the percentage of people affected who need it?
I think that's right. I think we're also very worried about the excess mortality from not being able to access other forms of healthcare. If you've got acute malaria as a young child, you know, that's definitely a killer disease still. I think the only positive thing, really, I try and hold on to the positives. I mean, Africa has got a very youthful population. Half of the population is under 20 years old. And we know that younger people tend to have more mild illness. But we're not really sure what that means for example, young adults with HIV or with obviously infections like TB. It's not good news. There are new tests on the horizon. There's new rapid tests coming. There will hopefully be some studies fairly soon to show whether any of the therapeutic agents are effective. Of course, we're all crossing our fingers that the vaccine development will go smoothly, but we're not expecting much for at least a year or so. But I think hopefully there are some things that we will have learnt already from the experiences in China and in Europe and in Asia that we can try and apply to these other countries where we're working.
Thank you very much, Claire, and all the best to you for the work that you're doing all the time, but particularly at the moment, even more complex. Thank you, Claire Mills, the New Zealander, formerly of Northland, where she was Medical Officer of Health, but now is Médecins Sans Frontières Medical Director based in Paris.